Hello, this is the AusMed Handover Podcast. My name is Darren Wake, and today I'm going to be talking to Dr. Georgina O'Donnell, a clinical psychologist who specialises in the treatment of post-traumatic stress disorder, and Anne, a registered nurse whose life and career have been profoundly affected by the trauma she has experienced. I'm here talking to Dr. Georgina O'Donnell from Forensic Clinic, and Anne, who's been gracious enough to come here and talk to us about her own experience with post-traumatic stress disorder. And I'd like to start talking to Georgina. Can you tell us a little about yourself and how you became involved in the treatment of post-traumatic stress disorder?
Yes, I'm a forensic and clinical psychologist in private practice here in Hobart. And I've been working in the field of trauma treatment since 1997. I first became interested in the field during my doctoral studies, and my doctoral thesis was focusing on motor vehicle accident trauma and recovery and just the aspects of why some people can go through a fatal accident and in terms of their exposure to trauma and their psychological recovery is good prognosis versus those that do not, and what are the differences between people and between treatments and between supports that enable those different recovery pathways to happen. So that was where my thesis was focusing on, and then I started practicing in the field of assessment and treatment. In the early part of that, I was working with the Antarctic Division around trauma experienced with people down on the bases, which, you know, just the accidents that would occur from time to time, and obviously in isolation, trying to provide psychological support for those people that were very isolated at that time. And then moving through to work within the prison system with critical incidents there and supporting the staff around those incidents, and now more broadly within emergency services, nurses, ambulance officers, fire, across emergency services now. So, yeah, certainly as well with Port Arthur in Tasmania 20 years ago now, there was obviously a great focus on the whole community recovery from that experience here within our community, and really making sure we had good on-the-ground local knowledge about how to support people through all the different experiences, whether they were at the site at the time or were involved as family members or emergency services personnel in that event too. So in Tasmania, we've had a lot of things to deal with, I think, over the last couple of decades. It's been important to be involved with clinical services.
Yes. Do you deal with a fair amount of health personnel?
Yes, we do. At Forensic Clinic, we receive referrals from within Department of Health and Department of Justice particularly, also Department of Education as well, unfortunately increasingly so with staff being exposed to violent incidents from students.
Yes.
So we certainly see professionals from all areas coming through with various forms of PTSD and acute stress disorders from workplace experiences.
Probably for listeners now, it would be great to actually qualify what PTSD is.
Yes.
Certainly as a layperson, I kind of have evolved over time. And originally I kind of thought PTSD was just soldiers coming back from war, you know, shell shock. And then a little bit later, emergency services, and then really major incidents. But honestly, I don't know what it is. So it'd be good to have somebody qualify actually what it is.
Well, it's a diagnosis that's evolved over time, that it did start with combat neuroses and the acknowledgement that people returned from war psychologically very injured and often unable to recover from that. So the original sort of diagnostic formulations were focused on that group, but we've certainly learned over time that more broadly people either directly exposed to a critical incident of any kind or vicariously as well, hearing about people's exposure to serious incidents of that kind can contribute to the development of this disorder too. So it's a diagnosis that has evolved over time and better reflects our understanding of how psychological injuries can happen to our exposure to everyday events and out of the ordinary everyday events.
Right. Does that place healthcare professionals who specialise in the treatment of post-traumatic stress disorder at risk?
Absolutely.
Right.
Yes.
Wow.
So any profession where you are exposed to traumatic content in terms of people's physical or psychological injuries definitely heightens your own risk as a practitioner of experiencing symptoms yourself and experiencing cumulative trauma over time. And that's, you know, it's focusing on nurses today. That's one of the reasons why nurses particularly have a heightened risk of developing PTSD across their careers or a trauma syndrome. It might not necessarily be the full criteria of PTSD. There's sort of different variations of trauma conditions that one can develop. But that accumulation through your career of caring for people and providing services to people in very difficult circumstances heightens risk.
Right. We probably should be more specific about the triggers. Just going back to being a layperson, again, from my perspective, I always imagine the triggers of PTSD as being really extreme, like, you know, a body torn up, a really horrific death. Is it always that traumatic?
Not at all.
I mean, I'm just thinking back then that hearing about trauma can also trigger it.
Yes. No, the triggers can be... can be a sensory experience, it can be a smell, it can be a sound that is just enough to remind somebody of everything that's occurred or the traumatic memory that's not yet processed. So it can be, as I said, a trigger. It can be a sensory experience, very, very simple, very everyday. It can be a place, a person, seeing someone that reminds you of somebody that was associated with a trauma. It certainly doesn't have to be a graphic or overwhelming experience to be a trigger at all. It could be something quite innocuous and maybe something that people around you wouldn't even notice occurring at the time, but the person themselves would absolutely be experiencing severe distress when triggered in that moment and feeling that they're back in the place where the trauma occurred.
I'm just thinking back then to your thesis. I'm interested in this idea that some people can process a traumatic event and other people don't.
Yes.
Is there anything in that? I mean, I'm just wondering why the inconsistencies.
Yes. There's a lot of factors involved in prognosis for recovery, and when looking at the experience of an accident, an isolated event of that kind, the population I was looking at very much had healthy, fit lifestyles, active people up until that time when they had the accident and then everything fell apart. But when we're talking about PTSD from workplace exposure, for example, it's generally an accumulation of a lot of events over time that can lead to this condition, not necessarily one major event. And I think that might be where PTSD is underreported in health personnel, because we're all expected to deal with the things that we do every day as part of our job, and that's just part of it, and you're expected to get on with it.
Yeah.
But the accumulation of years and years of seeing people injured, distressed, presenting a threat to you in the work that you do takes its toll. And how people differ in their ways of coping with that can depend on the support that's around them, social support, good relationships. It can be related to previous vulnerabilities, so having traumas back in childhood and other things that predispose you to having a severe reaction earlier than perhaps somebody else. So many factors of genetic predisposition as well, of anxiety and depression and mood disorders and addictions and all of the things that can come with PTSD and how someone chooses to or is able to cope with the condition.
Yes.
So, in essence, an otherwise healthy person can quickly get PTSD straight away without any predisposing factors.
Yes.
Whereas somebody else may not, and it's not necessarily clear-cut why that's the case. But there, we can certainly look at risks and protective factors.
Uh, You mentioned there this idea, this concept in healthcare that we just kind of suck it up and get on with it.
Absolutely.
I'd like to very much talk to Anne in a moment about that. But I've always been amazed that there's this general consensus amongst healthcare managers and probably the public as well that nurses receive some kind of training, you know, to handle extreme events. And it's not the case.
No.
We're just as human and vulnerable as most people. Yes. And we don't have any special training that we go home and we say some certain mantra and the day is fine.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And I think that's one of the issues, is that expectation from within the profession itself, within management structures in an organisation.
Yes.
Just believing that if, you know, you either do the job or you don't. You choose to be there or you're not.
Yes.
And that's a pretty difficult decision. If you're struggling and it's your profession and you like your job and you want to do your job, but you know that it's hurting you.
Yes. Is it common amongst nurses?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Statistically, do you know how common?
I couldn't say statistically because it's underreported.
Right. Yes, that's my next point.
It's underreported.
Anne made that point when we were talking earlier that it's far more common than people realise.
Yes.
And I suspect many of the people listening to this podcast would be thinking, wait a minute.
You know, yes. So,
How does post-traumatic stress disorder affect the person that has it? How severely can it impinge on their lifestyle?
It can impact on every facet of someone's functioning. So it can be very severe, that not just workplace functioning, but within family relationships, just the basics of being able to sleep properly, eat properly, physical health, be able to participate in recreational interests that you normally would. So it can completely manifest through all aspects, be pervasive across all aspects of someone's life.
So it's almost crippling.
Absolutely crippling.
Yeah.
Yep, absolutely crippling.
So can you tell us what would be the signs that a person would recognise within themselves that they might have PTSD? What would give them a hint?
A sense of trepidation going into work is probably an indicator for the start when we're talking about related to workplace incidents. So feeling anxious about going into work. Flashbacks or intrusive thoughts about experiences, events that have occurred. So, you know, going about the normal business of your day and suddenly becoming aware that there are thoughts coming into your mind, or sensory experiences, thoughts, that of an event that you really don't want to be remembering at that time. Feeling irritable and unable to be as compassionate as you normally would in your job.
Right.
Feeling really frazzled, really on edge. Feeling jumpy, sort of easily startled. Feeling like you want to avoid certain situations that might remind you of something that's occurred. So being a little bit more reluctant, perhaps, to engage in your everyday business in the way that you normally would. It might be avoiding certain people or places in the course of your job. Certainly sleeping difficulties, digestive upsets, headaches, just generally an overall feeling that you're well-being is deteriorating, and just maybe not being able to put your finger on what's wrong, but just generally feeling unwell a lot of the time.
I guess that that wouldn't necessarily be that evident to your co-workers if you're good at suppressing everything, I suppose.
Yeah.
You know, sucking it up and getting on with it, so to speak.
Yeah, you know. Yeah. Exactly. And some people find that they tend to drink more or use other prescription medications more. Or just to try to get some relief from that general feeling of feeling unwell, or trying to dull the thoughts that are intrusive most of the day, try to get some respite from those thoughts, which can be quite overwhelming.
But we'll talk about treatment or management of PTSD in the latter third of this talk, but can it be treated?
Yes.
Yes. Successfully?
Yes.
Right. Well, that's encouraging. I'd like to talk to Anne now about her experience with PTSD and how it's affected your life and your career as a nurse in particular. Can you just tell us what happened to you, what your history is?
Well, I've worked for many years in emergency, so I was, over a long period of time, was verbally, physically and emotionally abused. And I say emotionally abused because a lot of patients that I dealt with took delight in telling me how what they did to their animals. And I've had 15-year-olds tell me that they had killed all of their animals and would go into the gory details of how they did it. The physical abuse was horrific. We would be bitten, scratched, kicked.
And this is regular?
Regular, on a regular basis. And although there are signs up all around the hospital saying physical and verbal abuse will not be tolerated, they tolerate it all the time.
Right.
It should be zero tolerance. Most of the people that we're seeing, there's a huge difference between mad and bad behaviour. And most of the people we're seeing are badly behaved.
Yes.
And the police bring these people in off the streets. Why, I have no idea. And they put us at risk all the time.
Right.
Anyway, over a long period of time, and this is the reason I think that I have been affected so badly, is that it was over a long period of time. And the incident where the ice addict who came in tried to kill me with a lump of wood was really no worse than any of the other incidents that I've had.
Right.
Yeah, you know, I mean, we get attacked all the time.
Right, so
so this was no, but it was just what we say, the straw that broke the camel's back.
Right.
And what Dr. O'Donnell said was absolutely correct in that the next day I tried to come to work and I'm walking down the ramp into the hospital and I started to shake. I went on leave and then they tried to get me back to work. And it was across the road from the hospital. So the proximity to the hospital was a factor in triggering my anxiety to the point where I would be vomiting on my way to work. I'd drive to work and I'd have to stop and vomit on the way to work, get to work, put on this absolutely amazing show of how fantastic I was at work.
Yes.
I was only doing 3 hours a day, 2 days a week, and I'd get home and I would be exhausted from putting on this show, this act. And then I would be anxious for the next day, thinking about the day after when I would have to go back to work again. It was just this constant nightmare. And, of course, I wasn't sleeping. And the pressure that I was experiencing, a lot of pressure in the emergency department as well because of my qualifications. I used to deal with a lot of the psychiatric patients as well as the general patients. So I could have somebody having myocardial infarction, but I'd also have to go and interview somebody with a psychiatric illness.
Right.
Who is exhibiting psychotic symptoms. And that takes time.
Yes.
And I'd be worried the whole time I'm interviewing the patient that I should be, you know, something could be happening to the patient having the myocardial infarct. And the night I was attacked, I had taken this patient down to a locked unit and he just destroyed the unit. So then he had weapons and he had shards of perspex and lumps of wood, quite big lumps of wood. And he was trying to kill me and two other nurses that were there. And we called the police again, and the police all turn up in flak jackets with guns and tasers and what have you. We don't have any of that.
No.
And the night he was brought in, this ice addict, it was six police who brought him in, all in flak jackets, all with tasers and what have you, and they handed him over to me, and he'd been handcuffed. They took the handcuffs off him, handed him over to me, like I'm going to perform a miracle.
Like you had some magic.
That's exactly right. Anyway.
Yeah.
We called the police back, but it just sounded like, it felt like forever that they took to get back to us. And he was threatening the whole time. You know, he was going to kill us and our families and what have you. It was just awful. And the phone rang in the middle of this, and it was the emergency department saying to me, "Where are you? You've taken too long to take this patient to the ward." And I said, "I'm being held hostage." And they did. It didn't even register. They said, yes, but you've got a lot of patients here to look after.
That's amazing.
And when I got back to emergency, that was about 1:30 in the morning, when I got back to emergency, I had to hit the ground running, and I had a lot of patients to see. And
so no respite whatsoever.
Nobody offered me a cup of tea, anything.
No.
And I just kept running. I hadn't had anything to eat, nothing. And I went home in the morning feeling pretty awful by then. I was quite feeling nauseated. And then I just unravelled from there.
Right.
And the next day was just horrendous. I finished the shift. I can't believe I even did that. But you do it, you know.
Yeah, and, you just suck it up and get on with it.
Yeah, I think the thing you do miss is that, I miss now from nursing, is that you were doing something helpful for people. You know, you were actually helping people.
Yes.
That I just feel I'm useless now. I'm no good to man or beast.
Was there a point where you sort of thought, I'm not just stressed, this is something far worse?
I knew the next day.
Really?
Absolutely knew. Well, that's because of my psychiatric training.
Yes.
But there are a lot of nurses out there who would have no idea.
Yes.
They would just think, oh, get on with it.
Yes.
And I knew there was something seriously wrong and that I wasn't going to get over it in a hurry. For me, though, I had booked a holiday, and it was about 2 days later I flew to New Zealand, and I was meant to be kayaking around the Coromandel Peninsula, and I vomited the whole time I was in New Zealand. I just couldn't go anywhere without vomiting. I couldn't drive. No. I'd be crying in the car. It was just dreadful.
Yes.
And so then I knew, well, this is it. I can't go back at this stage.
Yes. I mean, it's interesting you had insight as a psychiatric nurse, but there must have been a point where you realised that you couldn't self-treat.
Oh, absolutely, you can't. I have insight into the problems I have, but overcoming those problems is a different matter altogether. And it's not as though I haven't tried. I have done everything that Dr. O'Donnell has told me to do. And she has set me tasks along the way. They always take me outside of my comfort zone. And I have to really force myself to do these things.
Yes.
And then it's sort of, oh, thank goodness that's over with. You know?
Yes.
But it takes you out of... Because otherwise I'd still be at home.
Yes.
I wouldn't leave the house.
It's kind of rebuilding your confidence. So.
I wouldn't leave the house.
Right.
Because it was the only place I felt safe. And I used to play tennis nearly 7 days a week.
Yeah.
Couldn't eat, couldn't sleep. And the nightmares are so horrendous. It's not the attack. I don't ever, you know, have flashbacks on the attack. Because it was no worse than any other ones that I'd ever had.
Yeah.
What I do have is always pressure. It's the pressure that I'm experiencing in the nightmares. And it's so bad. One night I woke up from a nightmare and I was actually out of the bed and trying to run.
Mm. What kind of attitude did your colleagues have? Were they supportive or were they dismissive?
Somebody, a close friend of mine, died, and a lot of the people that I had worked with were at the funeral, and that's the first time they had seen me. You can tell they feel uncomfortable around you.
Yes.
Because I say to them, and I'm completely honest, when they say, oh, how are you? I say, I'm damaged. And I am. It affects every area of my life.
We should really explore now what the approaches are to treating post-traumatic stress disorder, if you could tell us what that involves.
I think the most important thing is to acknowledge that the treatment of PTSD is long-term management, that PTSD can be episodic in nature, so depending on other stresses and other situations within life, PTSD symptoms can be exacerbated by certain triggers. You can have episodes of severe and then resuming a better level of functioning for a period, but then possibly another episode. So certainly my treatment approach is that it requires long-term intervention, long-term therapeutic relationships where you can establish trust with one or two or three people in your treating team. That might be psychologist, GP, psychiatrist, mental health nurse, clinical social worker. It can be a multidisciplinary team approach. There's the role for psychological therapies, there's the role for medication where need be, particularly in relation to sleep and appetite, and just trying to get that baseline level of functioning back to a manageable level again. The psychological approaches are varied, so core foundation is CBT, so cognitive behavioural approaches. There's also a role for trauma-focused exposure therapies when that's appropriate. But the CBT really, I think's the core treatment, because it really gets to the bottom of the cognitive symptoms of PTSD, which relate to things like the change belief systems that you have in relation to work and people and expectations of what's next in life. And PTSD really changes those value systems and belief systems that you've previously operated within. And that can be part of ongoing depression with PTSD. If you feel that life's not worth living, or that you expect the worst from people, and those are the things that we would spend a lot of time on in therapy, of looking at those belief systems and expectations, as well as the behavioural side of, as Anne was saying, trying to re-engage with recreational interests even when you feel least like doing it and that you don't have the energy to do it.
Yes.
That was one of the things from my thesis research that came out, that those people that were able to re-engage with those things that they'd previously enjoyed, go back to those social networks, they had the best outcomes. They really were the ones that were able to get through their symptoms more quickly and manage them more effectively over time.
I'm just thinking that everywhere I've worked over the years where the employers offer counselling, it's usually two visits. So I gather that's wholly inadequate for something like post-traumatic stress
disorder. Absolutely inadequate. I think the models of critical incident debriefing and stress, but they're important in the sense of, as Anne said, going back onto shift after an incident like that without anyone sort of stepping in and saying, look, Anne, perhaps you need to go home early today or have a cup of tea or have a chat with a staff member before you leave the shift. Those sorts of interventions, I think, are really important on the shift and in the 24, 48 hours afterwards to make sure there's some pastoral care around that staff member. But in terms of the clinical treatment, in my view, it's definitely a long-term proposition. That doesn't mean every week at a mental health professional, but it means having that relationship where you can go back as regularly as you need to when you have symptom exacerbations over a period of often years.
Yeah. And how do you deal with those exacerbations?
Well, I have a very good circle of friends that are social workers, psychiatric nurses. So they understand.
Free.
And they understand when I'm irritable and what have, whereas the average person wouldn't.
No.
And I find what I worry about is that I'm morphing into one of those disgusting creatures that I used to have to deal with because my anger is so great.
Yes.
I have, the anger is so hard to deal with because I just feel I'm vicious all the time.
Right.
And I never was before.
Yeah.
And now I can just rip people's arms off, you know, I just get so angry.
Yes.
And
I just move my chair back.
And you get a skewed view of the world.
Mm.
And I don't expect good from anybody anymore. Now, I'm surprised now when somebody actually does something normal.
Yes.
Really, I think, oh, that's lovely. Uncommonly decent, I would call it.
With career planning and rotations within the nature of the work that you do, I think that It's a really important part of prevention for all health professionals to change roles regularly, change specialties if possible as well from yes. time to time, so that those trauma-laden areas like emergency department, psychiatry, oncology, those areas, you know, I think if you can step out of the clinical role from time to time and engage perhaps in staff training and other things that take you away from that trauma content for a period yes. of time and have some respite and then perhaps return to the area that you love, I think just being aware of that and planning for breaks from content, I think, is really important for us all to consider.
We've been talking about an experience, like a cumulative experience, but let's say somebody, a nurse, experiences an assault or sees a particularly horrific death or something in the more orthodox kind of shocking kind of thing. What's the best thing that they can do straight away or their colleagues can do straight away that could avoid the really long-term difficulties for them? Is there anything that can be done straight away?
I think immediately take a few days off, be with your family and friends, and allow your body a chance to settle down from what is the healthy survival response that we all have. And it's that fight-flight mode that you have when you're operating, dealing with an emergency situation like that. And one of the problems with PTSD is that our body gets stuck in that survival response when it's not needed.
Yes.
So when it's acute like that, it is important to give yourself, allow yourself the time for your body to calm down and outside of the workplace and to re-enter it in a way that you feel you're back to your baseline rather than continue to try to push through because that's what's expected or because you feel you have to. I think it's far healthier to take that time out, a couple of days, a few days a week if need be, to be with your family and friends and do your recreational interests and allow yourself the time to process what's happened.
Yes.
Because that's one of the other things with PTSD is when a memory is not processed at the time because things are too busy or too stressful to actually sit down and think through what's occurred, that's when you can have ongoing problems with nightmares and flashbacks and things as well.
Yes.
So time is important. Give yourself the time.
Yes. Thank you very much, both of you, for coming in and talking about a difficult and, as we both, we all realise, largely undiagnosed amongst nurses, topic. Thank you to Dr. Georgina O'Donnell of Forensic Clinic. Forensic Clinic can be found on www.forensicclinic.com.au. And Anne, thank you very much for coming in and talking about your experience.
Thank you. Thank you.
If you believe that you may be suffering post-traumatic stress disorder, then I encourage you to speak to a healthcare professional soon. Healing is possible, but you need to take the first steps on that pathway. This is the AusMed Handover Podcast. My name is Darren Wake, and if you found this episode interesting, then please subscribe. I also encourage you to leave reviews on iTunes and SoundCloud and comments about this particular episode on the AusMed website. Thank you for listening.